Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingenstein.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingenstein with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Andrea Schilling. She is a strategic advisor for Empower Capital. And previously, she was senior managing director at Varde Partners. She's held senior level positions throughout her career, and she was a CHRO. She has some great thoughts to share around leadership and managing your career. And also, she shares some thoughts around working globally. We're looking forward to today's conversation with Andrea. It's great to have Andrea joining us for our conversation this week, and appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to talk to us.
Absolutely. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I guess first off, can you just give us a little bit of your background, a little bit of your history, a little bit of your career story?
Sure. So I've spent the majority of my career leading HR teams and HR functions, but I didn't come to HR by way of education or training. I really kind of fell into it. I started my career in public accounting, where I earned my CPA and then went on to work as the controller for a small startup software development company. And looking back, it's maybe a little bit ironic or a little bit telling that the first project they gave me in that role was to create their first employee handbook. And I remember thinking at the time, this is so weird. I'm going to take a job as a controller and they're having me do the employee handbook. But I quickly realized that in a small company, you do a little bit of everything. And so not only did I lead finance and accounting in that role as controller, but I also oversaw kind of all of the non-revenue generating functions, some revenue generating functions as well. But I oversaw IT, HR, administration, building management. If the garbage needed to be taken out, I made sure that got handled too. So that was really kind of the first big career role where I touched HR, even though it wasn't a part of my role. And after several years as controller, I realized I really disliked accounting. And it wasn't what I loved to do on a daily basis, doing the kind of the same things in a maintenance mode where you're doing the same things daily, weekly, monthly, closing the books each month and each year. It wasn't my thing. It kind of killed me actually to have to be in maintenance mode all the time. But my husband, who's also a CPA, is the one who told me that he thought I really would like a career in HR. And he encouraged me to have a conversation with the director of human resources from the public accounting firm I had come out of. And he said, just go get her thoughts, just talk to her and see what she says about human resources. And when I did, she actually offered me a job. And so that was my first real job in human resources, the manager of recruiting and training for what was at that time a regional public accounting firm called LACO, Larson Allen Wisher and Company. It went on to become Larson Allen. And now after many mergers and acquisitions, it's a firm called CLA. A year after I started in that role as manager of recruiting and training, the HR director who had hired me decided to retire. And at that time, the CEO came and asked if I would take the director of HR role. And I said, I don't think I'm qualified. I don't think I'm ready to do that. So they hired a different head of HR. And after 1 year, she left and they came back and asked if I would take the job. So that was when I became the head of human resources for a large public accounting firm. I was their CHRO for probably about 8 years and loved the job. It really gave me kind of my good, solid training in human resources. Then in 2007, I made the decision I really wanted to expand my expertise and do something global. And that's when I joined Varde Partners, which is an alternative investment firm. And I started as their first head of HR, really brought on to lead and build and grow that function and to also oversee administration, which I did. And so I ran that HR function for about 12 years. And that brought me up to about 2018, when I took a little different role within Varde and decided to lead internal communications and special projects out of the office of the CEO. And in that role, one of the special projects that they asked me to work on was to help with the launch of a new investment firm. This firm called Empowered Capital was being started by one of the founders of Varde. She was and currently sits on the board at Varde as well. And she had decided to start a new investment firm that really focused on moving capital to female founders and other underrepresented talent. So people who are starting private equity or VC firms that were either women or minorities. And so I was asked to come in, and because Varde, because it's an affiliate company of Varde, I got kind of seconded to this new company to help with everything around the startup. So what were we going to call the company? How are we going to brand it? What would the website look like? And then really to oversee everything talent related, hiring people, making sure we had the right infrastructure and systems in place. So that was in 2022 that I started doing that. And that's where I am today. So today I'm a strategic advisor to Empowered Capital. I'm actually an employee now of Empowered Capital. And I also oversee, along with one of my colleagues there, our multiplier program, which is a platform that we've put together at Empowered to really provide strategic advice and help to these managers that we invest in to help them either launch or scale their businesses.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. And it's amazing what people start out originally to do. A lot of times that's not the direction of their career. Great.
I think that's maybe more common than not, really, that people think they're going to do one thing and end up doing something very different.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, knowing what you know now, and if you're able to go back and talk to that 22-year-old Andrea, what would you tell her? What advice would you give her?
Yeah, I actually really love this question, Mark. I think this is, it really made me stop and think and to kind of go back and reflect on things that I wish I would have done differently. So if I was going to go back and talk to my 22-year-old self, what I think I would say is just be more confident in yourself. Here's one big thing. Rather than assuming that you're the only one in the room who doesn't know what people are talking about, ask the question. Give yourself enough credit that if you don't know, other people probably don't know either. And I just think that so often I felt like I was the dummy in the room, the one who didn't get it or didn't follow along. And if I could go back, I would just say, don't be afraid to ask questions. Be confident that you're smart enough that if there's something you're not understanding, if there's something you're not following, other people are likely in exactly the same boat. And even if they're not, ask the question, because it's something you probably need to know. Don't feel like you have to go figure it out yourself. Simply ask a question and let somebody clarify that for you. And I guess the other thing, as I reflected on this question, is I would tell myself, be yourself. Don't try to be what you think others want you to be or others expect you to be. Let your own style and your own personality come through. Be true to yourself every single day. And I think this is something that women, particularly women in business, struggle with. My experience, particularly, I think, coming up as a CPA, working in public accounting, then working in the investment area, I was really used to being the only woman in the room. And particularly when I got to that C-suite level where I was working with CEOs and other executives, and then being in the boardroom and presenting to boards, it was very common that I was the only woman in the room. And I think it's a little bit laughable now when I look back to think about all the things that I did to try to fit in and be like one of the guys. And I don't mean that the guys made it that way. I think I was just always so surrounded by males that I felt like I needed to change my style, my approach, maybe the way I talked or the way I brought things to the group in order to be more like the people that I was surrounded by. Sure. And now, all these years later, I really see the benefit of being that different person in the room. And I wish I would have taken more advantage of the fact that I was different. I didn't necessarily think the same or speak the same or put things together in the same way as everybody else around the table. I was different. And as leaders, I think it's just so important that we embrace the differences that people bring to the table. And I do think the environment today is so much better about that than it was, you know, 20 years ago or more when I was coming up. But diversity of thought, diversity of background, diversity of cultures and world views, like these are just things that make our organizations so much better. And if people try to hide their true selves or try to be what they think everybody else expects them to be or wants them to be, I think we end up really tamping down sure. that diversity that is so critical and that really gives our organizations, I think, the ability to be innovative and to be creative and to just do things differently than the way we always have. So I would certainly go back and do things differently and really try to be my authentic self and not feel the pressure to change myself to be more like everybody else.
Yeah. Good advice. So what leadership advice do you wish you would have received earlier in your career that you think would have been helpful as you led your first team?
Mm-hmm. Well, there was advice that I received from an executive coach probably towards the middle of my career that would have been so powerful for me if I would have gotten it earlier. And that was to be bold. And he, you know, as part of that leadership coaching, the executive coaching that I was fortunate to get, we all had to go through a 360. So anybody in our organization that had the benefit of an executive coach also had a 360. And my coach said, you know, Andrea, the common theme that comes out here is that everybody wishes you would just like see yourself for what you really are bringing to the table. If there's anybody stopping you, it's you. Mm-hmm. And you just need to be bold. And so I came out of that coaching with, one of my favorite quotes, and that is really be bold in everything, be bold. And I used that. I kind of always put together for myself, like saying for the year, something I really want to focus on. And be bold was my saying for a whole year, that just kind of a mantra that went through my head all the time. If I ever had something that was a stopper, something where I thought, I really would like to do this or say this, but I'm not sure I should or I can, I would just remember this advice that he gave me, which was just be bold, be bold.
So thinking about any advice that you received that, you know, some people are, they mean well, but they give you advice that maybe isn't helpful in your career. Has anything come out that you think you should have ignored or you did ignore that maybe a pitfall for somebody else?
Right. Well, in thinking about this question, the advice that I think I would ignore, and I'll explain it just a little bit. Over the course of my career, and I think this might be coming through public accounting and then into the investing area, but the number of terms I heard, just work hard and grind it out. Put your head down and grind it out. I mean, that was just advice that you heard over and over again, right? Was just grind it out. And I think there's a place for that. And I certainly believe in the power of hard work and that you need to be driven. And sometimes you do just need to go head down and get things done. But I have really taken that advice now and changed it for myself to the philosophy of work smarter, not harder. Because I have seen so many people over the course of my career who work really hard, but I'm not sure that they work really smart. And there is kind of this, sometimes people get a real satisfaction from being the person who's their earliest, their latest, you know, willing to come in and work on the weekends, or has, you know, the ability to say, I put this many hours in or whatever. Again, I think that's changing, thankfully. But I would ignore that advice of just work hard and grind it out and change that to work smarter, not harder. I love efficiency thinking. I love it when people challenge the status quo and say, why are we doing this? Or why are we doing this way? Is there a better way to do it? And I think with all of the technology that is available to us, there are just so many things that we do on a day-to-day basis in our jobs that could be done better. Or maybe they could be done by somebody else, so that you're not taking all of the load on yourself and having to be the one who is working so hard and grinding so hard. I think as a leader, especially, this is where there's so much opportunity to say, what am I doing that somebody else could do? And it would actually be a great opportunity for them. Something that maybe is just a time suck for me, sure, because I've done it so many times, but it's just, you know, expected that I'm the one who's going to do it, that somebody else would look at it and say, wow, I've never done that before. That would be a great opportunity, or give me exposure to something or someone that I haven't had exposure to before. So I actually have, I keep a lot of Post-its around me, actually, but one of the Post-its that is on my computer screen right now says, work less, accomplish more. And that's advice I wish I would have gotten, is, you know, there are ways to work less and accomplish more. And when you do that, it just opens up so many more opportunities to be creative in your thinking and to do different things that you haven't done before. So that's probably a piece of advice that I maybe wouldn't ignore, but I would maybe alter.
Yeah. So people that work in a global environment typically say that, you know, it's definitely a growing experience to work globally, just because you're having to work with people from different backgrounds, cultures. What are some things that you've learned as you've worked globally? And, you know, we've become a lot more global as far as business, and right. Sometimes people are thrown into a new role where they're required to lead teams globally. What have you learned about that you think would be helpful?
Yeah, well, I think that there are things about leading a global team that are the same as leading any team. And I think there are things that are very different. And so when I think about leading any team, there really are a few things that pop out to me as being really important. One is being yourself without apologizing for it. Like, figure out your leadership style and stick with it. Be you as a leader, because if you try to be somebody else, you're going to fail. The only thing I would say to that is, if you're a jerk, you got to figure out somebody else to be, because nobody's going to follow a jerk, right? You've got to be a good person, but figure out your style. Some people use humor. Some people use, you know, putting carrots out there for people. But you just have to figure out what your leadership style is. And I think that goes for whether you're leading a US-centric team or a global team. People will just appreciate you being who you are, them knowing who you are, and you are consistently that leader. I think another thing that's so important is being transparent. I've often said, everybody likes to feel like they're in the in crowd. Nobody wants to feel like they were the one left out. They didn't get information. They didn't understand the plan, or they didn't know something was going to be happening. So as a leader, and again, here, this applies just as much for being, if you're a global leader, maybe even more, being transparent and making sure people know what you're dealing with, why certain priorities are priorities, what you're expecting of them. I just think I like to take the approach that let's just assume everybody can know everything, and then you weed out the few things that they can't, instead of assuming everybody shouldn't know and assuming the few things you can bring them under the tent on. Bring people under the tent on as much as you possibly can, so that you can all work together and know what you're doing and why you're doing it. Here's where I think something that is very important as a leader of teams is to know your people. And I know that gets really hard if you've got a team of 100 people or more. In that case, try to know as much as you can, but definitely know your direct people and those who are reporting directly to you. Know how they like to work. What are they best at? What are their real strengths and key skills, and how can you utilize those things so that people are tapping into their best skills every day? I think it's really important to know what's going on in people's lives, and what do they want to do next in their jobs. And if I think about leading global teams, all of that applies. But this is where I think as a global leader, you need to stretch. And that is, you need to understand different cultures and what's happening around the world. You need to be really informed, understanding kind of geopolitics and what's happening in other countries, because you may have employees that are bringing some of that to work with them every day. I remember one of the first, I wasn't in a global leadership role at this time, but I had an employee who reported to me who was from Japan. Her and her family still lived in Japan. And she was an only child. And unfortunately, her father passed away. And she came to me and she said, I'm going to need 3 months to go take care of my family, to be with my mom, and to take care of my dad's estate. And I thought, what? there's no way we can do without you for 3 months. But the choice was to figure out how to do without her for 3 months or to have to refill that position, because it wasn't an option for her. This was part of her culture. It was tradition. Again, she was an only child. She needed to go. And so we let her go for 3 months and take care of what she needed to take care of. And I've had so many situations like that. I had an employee who was from, I believe, Pakistan, and came and said, "I need to go home for an arranged marriage. I'm going to need a month off to go meet my wife and go through the ceremony." Well, that was something I had never been exposed to in my Minnesota leadership roles before. But it was something I had to quickly get up to speed on and figure out how to make that work. Another thing as a leader of a global team was just understanding how other kinds of leaves work. Having a team of mostly women in our London office, it was a bit of a shock to me when I realized that taking 12 months off for maternity leave was just normal, and it's what everybody was going to do. I was at that time used to somebody taking 12 weeks in the U.S. So as a global leader, you just really need to immerse yourself in the various cultures that your people are coming from, and also try to understand kind of what they're used to in terms of how you communicate, how they work. It may be just very different than what we're used to in the U.S. And maybe I would just end that with, as any leader, the other thing I think is so important is communication. Just communicate like crazy with your teams. I'm a real fan of a weekly team meeting. Some organizations I know do that more often. I don't think you should do it less often. A weekly team meeting to make sure everybody is aligned and on the same page is really important. But here, if you have global teams, you need to take time zones into consideration. When I had direct reports and teams that were in the US, in the UK, in Asia, all at the same time, it was pretty tough to do our weekly team meetings because, let's face it, nobody loves being on a one-hour meeting at 9 o'clock every Wednesday for weeks and months on end. Sure. And nobody maybe really wants to do it at 7 a.m. every week either. And so we took that into consideration and we would flip-flop things around. The lucky people in London got the middle of the day no matter what. But between the U.S. and Asia, sometimes we were on early morning, sometimes we were on late night. But it was really important that we talked to each other and we saw each other every week in order to feel connected. And global teams in particular, it's just very important to feel connected and like you know what's going on in the offices and within the teams in these other locations where you might have team members who never, they work together every day, but they never see each other in person. And that's common. And so figuring out ways to help them see each other is important. And as a leader, I do think it's really important that you get there and spend time with people. So as hard as it might be to go to all of these various locations and spend time away from your family, I think it is really important that you show that as a leader, you have an interest in people and you get there and you spend time with people or bring them to you so that you have opportunities to spend time. It's a big part of the communication piece, being a leader.
So having led teams and hiring a lot of people, and one of your roles as a CHRO was to oversee that talent and making sure you get the right people in the organization. What are some things that you, tips that you would give a new leader as they're hiring additional people for their team? What are some things that to look out for as you're hiring?
Mm-hmm. Well, I love this question because I'm very passionate about the idea of bias in hiring, and I do a lot of coaching with other leaders about how to de-bias your hiring process. So as a leader, I think one of the biggest things to keep in the back of your mind, well, it's probably in the forefront of your mind when you're hiring people, is not to hire people that are just like you. Not to hire, I call them mini-me's. There's a lot of different terms for them. But we all have just a natural tendency to want to surround ourselves with people who are just like us. It's really fun to have a conversation with people who have things in common with you, whether it's that we went to the same university or we worked at the same other organization or we share the same hobbies or we enjoy the same sports. It's fun to have those conversations, but I do think we need to be very cautious that we don't surround ourselves with people who all look and think the same. It goes back to my diversity point earlier. So as a leader, what I really like to encourage people to do is think about what they are really good at and what their team is currently really good at. And now outline all of the things you're missing. What are the things you're not good at? For me in particular, I'm not great about data. I don't love spending time in spreadsheets and analyzing the data. It's a big part of the role as a chief HR officer. I managed a $100 million compensation budget. You've got to be comfortable with information and data. But I always made sure I had somebody on my team that loved that stuff, that loved digging into the data and could put together information for me so that I could understand it well and speak to it. So find the gaps, find the holes, identify the things you're not good at or that you don't love doing, and hire people that bring those skills. Because as a team, you're going to be best if you're really well-rounded and if you can cover all of the things that you're responsible for through your various people. And no one person is going to cover it all. So find people who are different from you and people that will challenge you. You don't want people who are just going to do or say whatever they think you want them to do or say. You want people who are going to give you a bit of challenge.
Yeah, great advice. So every leader continues to learn and grow and develop. Are there some books that you would recommend that have been helpful to you as far as a leader? And what books would you recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, sure. Well, I love this question too, because I am an avid reader. I generally have 3 or 4 books on my nightstand at any one time, which is a little bit the way I work too. I like to have 3 or 4 projects going at any one time. Any less than that, I don't do anything. Any more than that, I get a little discombobulated. But one of my favorite books, I actually call it my leadership Bible. I've given it to so many new managers and leaders over the years, is a book called First Break All the Rules by Marcus Buckingham. And it's really a book written for managers. And it does talk about the difference between managing and leading. But there are so many good principles that apply to leadership, particularly around figuring out the things that the people on your teams need in order to be happy in their work and to be fulfilled in their work. And it also, it's the first book that I read that really talked about the fact that I, as a leader, needed to learn to treat everyone as their own person and to figure out what each individual needs and not to think that I had to apply everything evenly across my whole team and give everybody exactly the same thing in the same way. And I found that really helpful. The other leadership author that I really do like is Patrick Lencioni. The Five Dysfunctions of a Team is just a fantastic book for any leader. I've used it with teams that were truly dysfunctional to help us figure out, okay, how are we going to get past this? How are we going to get people working with each other and maybe not liking each other, but at least respecting what you each bring to the table? So I've got a number of Patrick Lencioni books, and I pass those along to people as well. The other thing I guess I would say, and this maybe goes back to the global piece too a little bit, Mark, is I think it's just really important for leaders to be informed about what's going on in the world. So I have a number of leadership emails that come to me on a daily basis. So McKinsey is always doing great research and putting out great papers on leadership and other business topics. So a lot of information that I get is coming from McKinsey. Korn Ferry has great leadership information. Deloitte, I'm subscribed to all of their like multiple daily newsletters that come from those organizations. There are so many good authors. John Cotter is one that I love, who's a professor at Harvard, and his books and articles on leadership, I've used so much of his information over the years.
So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
Well, a lot of things for sure. I love spending time with friends, whether I've got good groups of friends that I golf with. I play pickleball a few times a week. Hopefully that doesn't, I don't think anymore that does age you, because people right. of all ages are yeah. doing it. I'm a former tennis player and now just love playing pickleball. Going out for happy hour for dinner. I love being with friends. I'm an extrovert. And so spending time with people every day, I actually do to recharge. I love spending time with my husband and my son. We can do anything, even just sitting on the couch, watching TV, and that fills me up. And I walk. I walk every day. That's my main form of exercise. So I generally spend, like I said, I spend about an hour every day just getting all of this news. A lot of the time that's coming through things I'm listening to while I'm walking. I try to get out and walk for an hour every day. And that keeps my head space clean. I come back after walking for an hour in the morning and I've just got all these new ideas that I'm jotting down and taking note of. So I think having that time to have some really nice, clear headspace is super helpful.
Yeah, good stuff. So parting advice you'd give to a new leader?
Yeah, parting advice would be life is short. Make sure you're doing something that allows you to have fun every day. If your job is not allowing you to have fun every day, figure out what you've got to do to make that happen. And, you know, if you're dreading going to work, if it's just dragging you down instead of filling you up, make a change. And my advice around that is quarter churns can be really powerful. You don't have to make a big change or a full stop change in order to make sure you're having fun. Figure out what some little changes might be that will bring you fulfillment and joy and happiness in your job. But if you are not happy, if you're not enjoying it, you have to make a change. You should love your job every day. That doesn't mean you're going to love everything in your job, and there will definitely be crummy days. But if you're not loving it, make a change.
Well, great advice. And I know this is going to be helpful to those listening. And Andrea, appreciate your insights and wish you continued success in all you're doing.
Thank you. Same back to you.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.